Hey everyone, just a quick note before we start the podcast. If you are enjoying these, make sure you subscribe to the podcast to stay up to date on all the new releases. It's also super helpful if you can leave a review in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast platform you listen to this on. If you enjoy the holistic message we're spreading here and think more people need to hear this, your reviews help push the podcast up the podcast charts and more people find it, listen, and make the world a better place. And if you want to get even more from us, including weekly newsletters highlighting the latest and greatest in nootropic and mental health news and research, along with first dibs on new content and partner product deals, make sure you go on over to holisticnootropics.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and sign up with your name and email. I promise I won't spam you. Your support means the world to me and keeps this whole project going. With that, let's get into the podcast.
You're listening to the Holistic Nootropics Podcast, your home for holistic, evidence-based cognitive enhancement strategies. And now your host, Eric Levi.
Hey, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Holistic Nootropics Podcast, where we discuss holistic cognitive enhancement. My name is Eric. I'm a functional nutritional therapy practitioner. And today on the podcast, I have A. Gregory Luna, host of the Awakened Man Podcast, formerly the Holistic Health News Podcast, and the Red Pill Men's Health YouTube channel. So me and Gregory had a really fun conversation all about really the state of mainstream health, mainstream mental health, really a lot of this kind of red pill talk about, you know, these different ideas behind corruption in the health system, some conspiracy theory talk, and really kind of coming down to why holistic health truly is the answer, why a holistic approach truly is the answer to helping people solve many of their most debilitating health issues. So definitely check it out. All the show notes can be found over at holisticnootropics.com/A. Gregory Luna. Also, if you are new to nootropics or you want to learn more about using supplements, diet, and lifestyle to hack your brain for peak performance, make sure to check out holisticnootropics.com. And with no further ado, enjoy my conversation today with A. Gregory Luna. Gregory A. Luna, welcome to the Holistic Nootropics Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Eric. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. This is a great opportunity. I'm a fan of your podcast. I know you just renamed it as of, I think, like today or this week. It used to be Holistic Health News. That's how I found you.
Yes.
And now it's the Awakened Man Podcast.
Yes.
So, you know, maybe you can kind of go into a little background as to why you started a podcast called Holistic Health News and ultimately why you've renamed it and rebranded into the Awakened Man Podcast.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of factors in my childhood that kind of led me to go to a more naturopathic approach and be kind of look askance on the allopathic traditional medicine that we have here in the States. I was a morbidly overweight child growing up. I was really, really fat. And I lost a lot of my weight when I was 18. And I kept it off now for 30 years. And so I think that kind of gave me an impetus to really care about clean eating and proper nutrition. And then I grew up, Eric, on a lot of shortwave conspiracy theory radio. And a lot of that was like, before Alex Jones, who's probably the most famous conspiracy theorist guy, before he was big and back in shortwave radio day. And a lot of it was a course on, you know, New World Order, One World Government, but they would have medical topics. And these medical topics were things that I had never heard about at all. Stuff about how, you know, genetically modified food is bad for us, or fluoride, the history of fluoride in our water, how it's a neurotoxin, and all these things I just found so fascinating, how we're deficient in vitamin D and all these things. And then at that time, my mother, who always suffered from depression, was doped up by her psychiatrist on 8 psychotropic medications. And a lot of them were antipsychotics, and they were really heavy drugs and she'd be drooling all day and she couldn't walk. And I think all this kind of created a concoction, a milieu where I lived in. I was like, oh man, big pharma. And so the kind of view I have at Holistic Health News is drugs should not be the first route, the first option. If we go to the typical doctor in America, the typical doctor meeting is 8 to 9 minutes. And he'll ask, he or she, not to be sexist, he or she will ask, what are your symptoms? And they're kind of listening. But their first thing to do is write you a drug, right? Write you a script. And they don't always tell you what are the side effects. They don't even tell you if it's efficacious or not. And a lot of well-meaning Americans will just take this drug. And it could be something like an SSRI or a benzo where you might have problems withdrawing from it or ever getting off of it because of the side effects. It could be something like birth control pills that can lead to a high rate of breast cancer and blood clots. It could be a lot of drugs that can have long-term ramifications that the person doesn't know about. And so I believe that naturopathy should be, or some sort of holistic health, botanical medicine, whatever, should be the first route that we do to prevent disease or to treat minor maladies. And when things get really, really bad, then of course we have typical westernized medicine that you can do for surgeries and for intervention, right? If you're shot by somebody with a bullet, you're not going to go to your aromatherapist to get treated for that. And so Holistic Health News is kind of a combination of talking about biohacks. So we have an episode on earthing and floating and the benefits of being in a steam room. We have episodes on talking about the microbiome and talk about the benefits of fasting. And then we have more of the kind of unearthing the malfeasance behind big pharmaceutical companies. A lot of the drugs that they've done have killed people or have side effects, like the drug Propecia, which is used for balding, for men who have balding. It's linked to a high rate of sexual dysfunction and erectile dysfunction issues. And even when you get off of it years later, you might not even get that stuff back. So we kind of cover that balance of really all three of those things. And a lot of the topics I had over there were kind of maybe more female-centric. And so I wanted to pivot and make it a little more androgen-friendly, because I have a YouTube channel called Red Pill Men's Health, which is more man-centric health issues. And I have another podcast on essential oils and herbalism, which is more female. So I wanted to kind of pivot Holistic Health News and make it more geared toward the same kind of holistic health, big pharma, suspicious stuff, but also have it more focus on men's health stuff.
Wow. That's why I wanted to have you on the podcast, because I really feel that I agree with a lot of what you said there. You know, I'm definitely in alignment, and the Holistic Nootropics blog and podcast that's what it's all about. It's all about how can we find, let's just start here. You know, you were saying your mom was on all these psychotropic drugs.
Yeah.
And, you know, now, I mean, in the last 20 years, the amount of research they've done on the gut microbiome, the amount that we know on toxicity, because people are now starting to study toxicity. We're starting to understand things like heavy metal toxicity and mercury and lead and aluminum. And I mean, we can go down the vaccine road too, you know? It's all of these things that we know their effects on the brain. We know that mercury crosses the blood-brain barrier. We know lead crosses. We know aluminum crosses. We know that the gut microbiome makes neurotransmitters, you know? And the fact that, like you said, when you see a doctor for 8 to 9 minutes, I mean, that's not enough time for him to even say my last name correctly, let alone like diagnose what's truly going on in the body. You know, it's like the kind of same thing, you know, you can almost find parallels with how we get information, you know, through the mainstream media, which is like we get through sound bites. But what you really need is a long form, almost Joe Rogan, 3-hour podcast conversation with your doctor to understand the intricacies of what's going on. So the holistic space, what draws me to it, probably a lot, which, you know, what you just said there, I agree with, because these problems, these psychological problems are holistic. They involve more than just brain receptors. They involve so many elements of the body and so many modalities that we have and we've discovered in recent years can be used and applied. And sometimes it's trial and error, you know, but I think
nowadays what people want is they want that quick fix. You know, we don't have the patience to deal with, oh man, you tell me I have to eat more kale every day. And it's like, no, you know, there's so much more to it, but you know, it's a journey, right? And yeah, I don't know if people have,
I like to tell, like when you go to the doctor and the doctor's like, okay, you have borderline type 2 diabetes. You have two choices, right? I can give you glucophage and you can keep drinking your beer and eating crap carbs, or you can radically fundamentally change your diet, change your movement and so forth. And maybe we can eliminate type 2 diabetes. Most people, like you said, are going to be like, well, just give me the pill, because they see the commercials. And we're one of the few countries that actually allows big pharma to have commercials. Are you depressed? Are you feeling sad? Go see a doctor about, you know, whatever drug it is, Zoloft. And I think this puts the idea in a lot of people's head, plus the whole pop a pill, I need instant relief mindset. So when a lot of people go to the doctor, they're like, yeah, I'll just pop a pill. And like, well, you know, this drug might lead to blood clots, or it might lead to a higher rate of you getting uterine cancer or something like that. And they're like, people just don't want to deal with it. And this is why I kind of like complementary medicine. Because if you go to a naturopathic doctor, an MD, they'll give you 30 minutes in the initial consult. So for example, let's say a teenage girl comes in and says, I'm having dysmenorrhea or irregular periods. She goes to the traditional Western doctor. It's write a script for the pill, right? Or some sort of hormonal contraceptives. Doesn't tell her the side effects, doesn't tell her any of those issues. Instead of asking, what's causing you to have irregular periods? They don't care. They just want to treat the symptoms. They just don't care. You go to a naturopathic doctor, maybe a chiropractor too, they'll actually look into the holistic body and be like, okay, let's find the root cause of what's causing this problem. Or you can use any example, joint pain or reflux. And that's what we need. And so that's what I like about complementary medicine is you look at the more benign, non-intervention, non-toxic routes first, whether that be clean eating, improving your sleeping, acupuncture, whatever it is, do those things first. And if they're not working, then maybe take the drug. But even then, I'm not a big fan of it. Like, let's look at blood sugar, right? Why don't doctors say, hey, why don't you increase your cinnamon intake? Cinnamon is great for blood sugar. You don't hear doctors talk about that. Why? Doctors get 6 weeks of botanical science and clinical nutrition in med school. They get no training on any of those things that we would call, let's say, clean eating, things that you can eat that, or things that you can drink like tea or coffee that are going to improve your health. They get a lot of training because big pharma pays a lot of money to these medical schools in the forms of grants, in the forms of donations, to have a kind of a quid pro quo agreement. Like, we'll give you all this money, but we're going to have our big pharmaceutical reps come in and talk to the medical students, and we're going to tinker with your curriculum. And so a lot of doctors are well-intentioned and well-meaning. They're just not trained in a lot of holistic health stuff. So if you go in and say, hey, maybe I don't want to take Atenolol for our high blood pressure. Maybe I should be eating more blueberries or dark chocolate or things that are good for blood pressure. Your doctor's going to think that you're a quack. Right. Or if you go in and talk about vaccines, right? Well, I heard, thimerosal is essentially mercury. And, aren't we supposed to limit our heavy metal toxins? Like, oh, you're a quack, get out. You know, and a lot of it is just pride and hubris of the doctors. And they just don't want to hear anything. They hate us, Dr. WebMDs, as they call us, right? Heaven forbid we look up stuff on the internet.
Yeah. And you know, the funny thing is whenever you do a search for something, it's WebMD that pops up at the top, you know, so that's like the authority. But they never cite any studies on there. It's just, this is the information. So just deal with it. And the average person doesn't have the ability to look at, you know, PubMed or do searches through clinical journals or anything like that. It's interesting too, with the drug thing. I was just thinking about this while you're talking. I'm currently writing an article on my blog all about Adderall and, talking about alternatives for Adderall, because that's what a lot of people use nootropics for. And I found a review by the Cochrane collaboration, who you probably know. They're as far as like systematic reviews and respected peer-reviewed research. They're like the number one kind of review authority. And they did a review on Adderall specifically. Yeah. And they basically said that there is no benefit to using Adderall for ADHD. So it's the number one ADHD medication. And they basically said, and it's because they did a review of all of the top research. They studied like 20 of the top review papers on or clinical studies on Adderall. And they basically said that the evidence is inefficient or it's basically not good enough, because the reviews they did were 16 out of the 20 of them were funded by pharmaceutical companies. Two of them didn't even disclose who they were funded by. The length of the study was only 5.3 weeks on average. So they can't even tell you long-term. And most people take Adderall for years. You know, nobody that I know who's ever taken Adderall, you know, aside from like at a party or something, took it for, you know, 5 weeks. They took it for years because their doctor just kept re-upping the prescription, right? And then they basically also said that we can't even decipher if this medication is effective, because these clinical trials, so many people dropped off due to complications with the medication, that we can't even tell if this stuff is even effective because so many people had bad reactions. And but yet the doctors prescribed this as a number one ADHD medication.
So why isn't this on page one of the New York Times, you know, or studies that say SSRIs are no more effective than the placebo effect? Why aren't these in the news? You don't hear about this in the news. And you know, and I would say that there's a reason for that. You think of something like the New York Times, which is radically left, right, and supposed to be anti-big business. You think they'd be jumping on news like this, but no, I mean, there's a revolving door. You know, if you look at our watchdog agency, CDC, WHO, FDA, they're all run by former big business, big pharma, big medical device executives. And what they do is they spend, let's say, you know, you have some executive at GlaxoSmithKline, some big pharma company, and then they're going to leave there and do their public duty and go to the FDA and either be the head of the FDA or the one of the assistants. And they'll do 4 or 5 years there. And now their job is to, because the FDA's double job is to safeguard the drugs and make sure we don't have drugs that kill us, but also promote American drug makers. So now they're in this conflict, this position of conflict, where now they're in the position to grant or speed through some of these medications that are being made by GlaxoSmithKline or Pfizer or whatever. And that's what they do. And then there's a conflict of interest. And after 4 or 5 years, they're like, okay, I'm going to resign. And then they go work for Pfizer, you know, and that's what they call it, the revolving door. So if you look at any of these watchdog agencies, look at the board of directors. They all come from big pharma, all of them.
Yeah.
So how can we trust these people? Just like at the CDC with vaccines, you know, the Simpsonwood conference, all these leaking stuff. How are we supposed to trust these people when they all have conflict of interest? It's mind-boggling. But again, tell me why it's not in the news.
Well, I think there's something to be said too about the fact that, you know, like what you're doing as far as asking these questions, it's hard to do that. You know, it's hard mentally, it's hard socially, because the second you do, you know, the knee jerk reaction is to call you a quack. It's to call you a crazy person.
You're
thinking
it's
dangerous. You're not a doctor. And, you know, there's something to be said. I was having this conversation actually last night, totally unrelated to health, just kind of having a conversation with somebody. And it's just interesting that from a young age, the public school system teaches us to trust and never question authority, right? So all the facts you need to know are in textbooks that were written by people who you know are smarter than you. The teacher is smarter than you. They talk down to you. They make you sit down. They make you, you know, just kind of essentially copy the things they say in order to move on to the next level. And I think subconsciously what happens is it trains us so that when we become adults, we are programmed to listen to authorities like doctors and scientists. And it can come off when I say that, like, these doctors and scientists, they don't go through a rigor of education and they're not smart. I think they're very smart. I think, you know, I think they go through a lot of work. I don't think medical school is something to take lightly in any way, or anybody who's a scientific researcher. But at the same time, I think that they are, you know, they have their beliefs because they've been taught a thing. And sometimes I think it's also hard for them to question the things that they've learned and essentially say, wow, maybe there's a chance that what I've been told is wrong. And now I have to, because that's what science is, right? It's constantly questioning. It's constantly proposing a hypothesis that questions the status quo, right? Like, if we just stop where we are now, or if we stopped where we were in like the 1970s and said, well, we know everything, so why do we need to keep doing science? Well, we would have never mapped the microbiome, you know, we would have never, we would have never found all of these discoveries that we have found in the last 40 years, 50 years now. So it almost feels like now in 2020 that what we're doing is we're making that mistake. We're saying, why would we ever question what the doctors are telling us about, you know, depression, about anxiety, about ADHD, or even about COVID, or about vaccines, or about all of these things we're dealing with? Because they decided a long time ago, this was the answer. They're telling us it's the answer, and it's too hard for me to question that. And if I question it, I could be wrong, which is scary, and I could be ostracized from society.
Absolutely. I mean, you see this in politics and religion. If you grow up with a certain ideology and then somebody tries to put that doubt into your head that everything you've been taught is a lie, you just don't want to hear it. You want to be an ostrich and put your head in the sand. And I think that's what you see. But what I tell people who don't believe in what I say, it's like, look, the doctors, like you mentioned, Eric, are well-intentioned, but you need to look at the medical school. The medical school. Who is funding the medical school? Who has their hands behind the curriculum at the medical schools? That's what I would tell these people. And then PubMed, a lot of these places have these studies that will tell you, blood, this drug is bad for you, or this biohack is good for you. So, I mean, they can look it up, but unfortunately, most people have a paradigm and they don't want to switch off that paradigm. Now, you and I did, but most people can't do it. Like with vaccines, I mean, we could spend hours on vaccines. You cannot really tell. It's very hard to get people to go from pro-vaxxer to anti-vaxxer. That because that requires what? So you're saying that my doctors have knowingly been giving me vaccines that are harmful to my children? They find it very hard to believe. And you can tell them, it's like, look, if your kid has an adverse effect to a vaccine, you can't sue the doctor. You can't sue the pharmaceutical company. Reagan assured this back in the 80s when they passed the legislation on this. You can go to Vaccine Compensation Corp, but you're going to be spending tens of thousands of dollars saddled over there, and you might get a positive verdict, but it's not going to be any kind of remuneration that's really going to help you if you have a kid that's brain damaged. And you can bring up stuff, but people just don't want to hear it because they can't fathom the idea the CDC is wrong. But then again, just like with the medical schools, go look at the history of the CDC. Who is the biggest purchaser of flu vaccines? You know, the CDC, they have a vested financial interest to push these vaccines on people. And again, I mean, look at the history of vaccination in the last 20, 30 years. Look how Europe doesn't really vaccinate their kids anymore. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, but people just want to be told what to do. They're essentially sheeple.
Well, it's so interesting too, because you have like this idea of the French paradox, right? And the French paradox is, you know, well, they eat a lot of bread. And how come they're skinny? And how come we eat a lot of bread and we're fat? And, you know, I think people kind of say like, well, it's the gluten. It's, you know, and I think there's truth to that. And, you know, we put more chemicals in our bread and probably there's truth to that. But I think you just hit it right there. It's like, well, we also medicate our people to the till, you know, and these medications, I mean, when you're talking about toxicity, one of the main functions of fat in the body is to essentially sequester heavy metals and toxins out of the bloodstream. It's a safety mechanism, built through evolution to protect the body. And essentially, when you inject metals and all of these chemicals into your bloodstream, and even when you're getting it through the environment, we're going to have an obesity situation. And then now we're discovering that there's this kind of intergenerational response or transgenerational response with toxicity, where, you know, if mom is exposed to mercury, grandkid will feel that mercury. You know, if mom has diabetes, grandkid will have that, will experience that diabetes. And we're just now starting to understand that. So, you know, it is interesting when you start looking around the world and it's like, well, why is American health? Why do we spend, I mean, exponentially more money on healthcare here, but yet we're the 37th ranked healthcare system in the world? It just makes no sense. Why do we continue to pour more money into a health system? And it just makes us worse, you know? Like, we shouldn't have worse healthcare than England. Have you seen the British people? Nothing against British people. We like you British people.
I think that, I mean, I wouldn't say there's like a conspiracy, but certainly big food gives us nutrient deficient, high calorie, crap food full of food dyes, MSGs, you know, other toxins in the food. And I think throughout the years, eating that kind of food makes us sick, and it's manifested in the type of disease. And then when you get whatever disease it is, let's say high cholesterol, high blood pressure, diabetes, whatever it is, then big pharma will come in and be like, we'll help you, we'll cure you. Hey, just take, you know, Lipitor for your cholesterol for the next 40 years as it destroys your liver. Instead of just learning, you know, just simple Google foods that will, you know, eliminate LDL cholesterol, triglyceride, high triglyceride. No, well, let's just put you on this. You're a little depressed, you know, maybe because you're eating crap and the gut's not making serotonin or whatever. Instead of, hey, you know, let's change your microbiome. Let's work on that. Let's give you some probiotics, prebiotics. Let's just put you on Zoloft. You know, so big pharma will come in with the quote solution for big food giving us crap food. And I don't know if I can cuss here, but I won't cuss. So they give us crap food, big pharma will come in, and then the big pharma drugs either don't help us or they make us worse. They have tons of adverse effects. And then at the end, you have big hospital come in to, you know, take care of us, give us surgery, or at the very end, put us in the hospice. And then, you know, charges $500 for every aspirin. So, I mean, I think there's some sort of conspiracy, because like you mentioned, like in Europe or where you live in the Caribbean, the food is so much more clean. It's cleaner food. The European Union doesn't allow nearly as much crap preservative foods than they allow over here. They really don't. And so the people, yeah, the Mediterranean diet, the French diet, they eat more bread, but they're healthy. You know, part of it is they're not as sedentary, but there's just a lot less toxins in the food, like you said. And yeah. I think this is something that needs to be looked at. Like you said, there's people have way too much trust on big food and big pharma. And like, we all know what we need to do to eat well and have longevity, right? It's not necessarily rocket science, right? Stay away from junk food, move your body, try to eat as many vegetables, you know, whatever, clean meats. We all know to do it, but look, 70% of Americans are overweight and 45% are obese. So we all know it on an intellectual level, but you don't really see it played out.
Yeah.
You know, this is a major problem. And I would argue this is what big pharma and big food and big hospital want, because they cannot, Eric, profit from us if we're healthy. They need us in some gamut, some wavelength between healthy and dead, right? Because they can't profit from us if we're dead or if we're healthy. They need us in some chronic state of disease. What's the best way to get us to that state? Crap food.
Yeah. You just made me think of adrenal fatigue, you know, because adrenal fatigue is not considered a real thing according to, you know, mainstream medical. Like if you go to your doctor and you say, I think I have adrenal fatigue, they'll laugh you out of the office, you know, because that's like a quack thing. But I mean, you know, we both know it's real. We both know that adrenal insufficiency is totally real. You know, we both know the adrenal glands are real. We both know the HPA axis is real. And we both know that it, you know, it's a spectrum of insufficiency, right? You know, you don't just go from zero to Addison's in a day, right? You kind of build yourself into it over time. Yeah. You burn yourself out, you know, and so many of these antidepressants are given to people who are experiencing the symptoms of real severe adrenal fatigue. Because if you can't power your mitochondria with, with the right, the necessary purpose of cortisol, which is a stimulating hormone, cortisol is demonized. They say you got to get rid of your cortisol. No, you need it. You just need it at the right times a day. you need norepinephrine, you need these hormones to work right. But if you overexpend them, if you eat too much sugar and you burn your adrenals out, and then you go to your doctor and you go, I don't know, I just have a hard time getting out of bed in the morning. Like, I feel just kind of this, this malaise throughout the day. You know, do you feel like kind of sad? Yeah, I guess that kind of goes with it. I feel kind of sad. Well, you should probably take an antidepressant then. And then you send them on, you know, you give them a little taste and now they're in and now they're yours forever. And try getting off that stuff. It's crazy.
And you can read the inserts. It even says in the inserts for the SSRIs, higher rate of suicidal ideation, higher rate of homicidal ideation. But we never hear about this. We never hear about higher rate of sexual dysfunction, higher rate of anxiety when you're on SSRIs. They're like, oh, it's okay. We'll just put you on Xanax or Ativan. So now you're on a benzo, which is a hypnotic sedative that is habit forming and is hard to get off of. And like you said, just put you on this cascade of drugs. Oh, you're a little depressed. So let's give you Abilify, which is or Halidol, these very strong antipsychotics that only people in asylums used to get.
Hey, everybody. Just wanted to take a second to break away from the podcast to tell you about my favorite pre-formulated nootropic stack. That is MindLab Pro. I look at MindLab Pro kind of like a nootropic multivitamin. If you're a nootropic newbie, this is a great nootropic stack to start with. Even if you're an experienced nootropic user, maybe you've been putting together your own kind of different stacks using different nootropics together, and maybe you've hit a plateau, maybe you just haven't found the one that works right for you. Maybe you found something that worked right, and then you try to pair it with something else, and the whole thing kind of fell apart, and then that original nootropic doesn't work for you. MindLab Pro is pre-formulated. It's made by scientists, so they actually pre-formulate it with the right amounts, the right ingredients, 11 research-backed nootropic ingredients, by the way, that are proven to help boost your cognition, your memory, your focus, your mood, all those benefits you look for out of a nootropic, especially a nootropic stack, you're going to get with MindLab Pro. You've got acetylcholine, which is going to boost your acetylcholine production. It's going to boost dopamine. It's going to boost your focus. It's going to boost your memory, your processing speed. You've got phosphatidylserine, which is going to help you with nerve growth factor. It's got glucose metabolism enhancement. You've got the modulation of the HPA axis. It's going to help your energy levels. It's going to help your mood. It's going to help your stress levels, which is so important. You've got Bacopa monnieri. You've got rhodiola, an amazing adaptogenic herb. You got one of the most popular nootropic or holistic nootropics out there, lion's mane mushroom. You're getting that nerve growth factor, literally growing new brain, promotes healthy brain cell function. So many amazing benefits from lion's mane. You've also got things like maritime pine bark extract, and of course, N-acetyl L-tyrosine, which is going to help boost dopamine levels, and of course, norepinephrine levels. So if you need a boost in mood, if you're dealing with some depression, if you just need to be a little bit more lively, let's say you're kind of falling apart going out in social situations, assuming you're breaking your social distancing, you're going out, you need a little N-acetyl L-tyrosine. And then of course, one of the classic great nootropics, L-theanine. Hit that alpha brainwave, get into flow. If you're trying to pair something with coffee to take the edge off a little bit, or if you're just getting rid of caffeine in general, L-theanine is a great nootropic amino acid. And then you have the cofactors, the B vitamins to help really put everything together, B6, B9, B12. You know, it's like you can have all these amazing nootropics together, but if you don't turn on the fire, if you don't stir the pot, that's what the B vitamins do. They help get everything together so that it's metabolized, it hits your brain, it works the way it's supposed to do. Right now, we have a deal with MindLab Pro directly through holisticnootropics.com. You get 3 months of MindLab Pro with an extra fourth month for free. Just go on over to holisticnootropics.com/MindLab Pro. Again, holisticnootropics.com/MindLab Pro. Get one free month of MindLab Pro with the purchase of 3. You can't beat this deal. The nootropic multivitamin, MindLab Pro, my favorite. Okay, let's get back into the podcast.
You're saying all the names of these drugs, and like I just moved into an Airbnb and there's a TV, and I haven't had a TV in literally 10 years. So, you know, I'm watching TV and you know, it used to be like you used to see like a drug commercial every once in a while, and it's like I'm watching the History Channel and it's just filled with drugs, man. It's just filled with all the drugs you just named off. And they tell you the side effects in the commercial.
Really fast.
You
know? really
fast. But it's so much. I mean, it's like 60 to 75% of the commercial is the side effects. And it's just such a crazy psychological experiment you see playing out in front of you, where it's like, you can just say all those things. You're going to, you know, suicidal thoughts, homicidal thoughts, you know, intense depression, anxiety, nervousness.
Second head, developing three more arms.
Right, you'll throw your cat out the window for no reason, you know? And then, but as long as it's somebody like kicking a soccer ball or on a stand-up paddle board or, you know, giving someone a high five, it's like, you don't even hear it. It doesn't even go into your brain. And the pharmaceutical company's like, well, we told you it could do this. How are you going to hold us responsible?
It's master manipulation. These commercials, especially on the antidepressants, it's always the same. The commercial starts with a woman in a dark room, sad, with sad music. And then, you know, do you feel sad sometimes? Do you feel you don't have a zest for life? And then try fill in the blank drug. And then as soon as that happens, the music changes, the light comes in, and then they show her with the good-looking husband and the good-looking kids. Because what they're essentially telling you is, by taking this drug, you're going to have a good-looking family. And when you weren't taking that drug, you were miserable in a closet. I mean, it's master manipulation. They know exactly what they're doing. They're not selling the drug. They're selling the lifestyle.
Yeah. It is master manipulation. It's really messed up. You know, I read this book a couple of years ago. It's called Overdosed. And the author, I forget his name, he was some kind of doctor. I forget which doctor, but he's basically talking about this. And you know, it's easy to blame the doctors, because essentially they're the salesmen of it. But, you know, I think it's in the 90s that they approved this idea of direct-to-consumer advertising for pharmaceutical drugs. They didn't used to be able to do that, and then they got the okay for it, you know, kind of almost close to the same time where they took away direct-to-consumer advertising of cigarettes, which is interesting, right? Because, you know, used to be able to open a magazine or see on TV Joe Camel or the Marlboro Man, right. And then they got rid of that, but then they said, well, now we can do commercials for Zoloft on TV. So what happens is, these doctors, again, 8 to 9 minutes to see a patient, people are walking into the doctor's office and they're like, I saw the lady on the stand-up paddle board with all her friends going shopping, and she looked so happy and she had the same thing I have. So I want that pill. And the doctor, he don't got time to say, well, are you aware of all the things that could go wrong with this? He just says, well, I need you to come back and see me. We got to keep the lights on in this office. I got to get myself a new Porsche, you know? And I hate saying like that doctors have bad motives, because I know so many of them are good, and they just don't know the new information, but they also have to run a business, you know? And so I think a lot of this is demanded by the consumer.
I used to work at an urgent care clinic back in the day, and I mean, it's even shorter than 9 minutes over there, but like you said, they have a business to maintain, and the less time, they're not going to be like a chiropractor or a naturopathic doctor and spend 30, 35 minutes with a patient. That's not a good business model, right? They want to go in, write the script, because they partly think this is really going to help. And they also know, why am I going to spend 15 minutes to tell this obese person to eat better or stop drinking beer, when we know that they're not going to start eating better or, you know, drinking booze or stop drinking booze. So they just want to crank through these patients because there's a financial motive. Like you said, the more patients they can see, the more cha-ching they can get, and they can get reimbursed. So, I mean, I don't necessarily blame that for it. I think the whole system, Eric, is just broken. It's all broken. There's no doubt.
Yeah. And then you factor in, you know, we were talking about food earlier, but you factor in the idea of corn subsidies, right? You know, the government literally pays farmers like this meager amount, because it's easier just to plant. They're like, we'll give you the crops, we'll give you the stuff. All you got to do is just put it in the ground and we'll pay you this money. And, you know, there's zero health benefit to government corn. I don't know if there's any benefit to regular corn, but you know, there's zero benefit. And then most of it gets used for, like, you know, high fructose corn syrup and then to feed the garbage cattle they grow. Yeah. And it's just amazing that it's like, when you look at what a cheeseburger from McDonald's should really cost, like in real money, you know, if they didn't do the subsidy, I mean, it's unaffordable to 90% of Americans, but because they subsidize the raw ingredients for it, you know, it's affordable, and we can go to McDonald's and we can get a cheeseburger for, you know, $2 or whatever, when it should really cost like $14. And then, you know, then you jump right back on the train and you're like, well, I got high cholesterol, or I got visceral fat, or what, you know, of course. What's that?
What a shock.
I mean, yeah, right.
People don't make the connection between big food giving you crappy food and then you developing a problem. And then lots of times these people, when they get cancer at 55 or whatever it is, they get diabetes, they want to blame the world. And this is something I talk about in my podcast. It's like, we have to be accountable for what we put in our mouth. We are all literate people. So instead of spending time learning about the Kardashians or memorizing everything about every NFL football team, why don't we look into the ingredients that are being put in our food? You know, why don't we look into nootropics or some sort of biohacks or learn about the history of the CDC? No, we don't do this. But when we get sick, we want to blame God. We want to blame the world. You've been drinking for 40 years and you get cirrhosis, right? You can't look in the mirror and say, you know what? I caused this to myself. And yes, there needs to be a certain amount of blame that goes to big business. But ultimately, we are accountable for what we put in our body. And I believe that. I don't believe in denial and blaming others. That's just a victim mentality. You know, we are all literate and we need to be educated. Forewarned is forearmed. And we all need to spend time looking at the ingredients. Like you said, corn is crap. If you look at most packaged food is going to have some GMO ingredient like corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup. Look at sodas. Like you said, because corn subsidies are so cheap, it's cheaper for them to put in high fructose corn syrup than sugar. Mm-hmm. You know? So if you look at any packaged food, it's going to have some industrial grade vegetable oil, which just destroys our coronary arteries. So you see soybean oil, corn oil, and that goes down the road of Ansel Keys. I mean, we could talk about the food pyramid and how, you know, we used to think high carb, low fat diet was good for us, but it ended up making us look like the food pyramid, you know? Yeah. And to our credit, now we're looking at low-carb, keto kind of lifestyle, which I would argue is probably better for you. And going back to what you were saying about 40, 50 years, how we need to keep changing and evolving and doing research. Because, the whole idea of a high-carb, high-grain, high-industrial-grade vegetable oil diet has killed so many people.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, when people ask me, you know, they're like, well, what do you do? Like, what's your diet like? I'm like, if you saw my diet, you would be shocked that I'm not obese, because all the foods they're telling you to not eat, I eat those foods and I'm in the best shape of my entire life. You know, I eat red meat almost every day. I eat egg yolks. I cook with butter. I know. Can you believe my cholesterol is probably through the roof and I've never felt better. It's absolutely bonkers. But I also eat, you know, I eat fruit. I'm low-ish carb. I'm not like low carb. I'm not keto. I know the place for that. But you know, I think some of the big things people don't understand, like I tell people, you know, it's all about ingredients, right? Like you can have a burger cooked in butter or you can have a burger cooked in vegetable oil, and they're going to literally be two completely different things, you know? And a lot of these studies that they cite when they tell you, well, red meat is going to cause heart disease. Well, it's funny because when you actually dive into some of these studies and you see like, okay, what were the raw materials they used? And they go, let me give you a better one. They go, saturated fat will give you heart disease, right? And then you dig into the methods and the materials. And then you see that the material that they fed the rats that caused them to have high levels of atherosclerosis on saturated fat, it was actually corn oil. They gave the rats corn oil and they called it saturated fat. And of course the rats all had heart attacks and died, but they tell you that it was saturated fat when it was really not what we would consider saturated fat. Right. And then people spout this as, you know, as this is the truth and you can't argue with it.
Yeah. If I talk to my mom, you know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s where fat was bad, right? Fat made you fat. So even today she's 80, she still buys skim milk. Wow. And I don't even bother talking to her about it, but she still buys aspartame laden, you know, sugar-free jam, sugar-free puddings. You know, we can talk about aspartame maybe another time, but yeah, the paradigm has changed, but the older generation, they won't change. But the way I look at it, I kind of look at it as a paleo diet. Like if God didn't make it, don't eat it. So eat a lot of nuts, eat a lot of seeds, preferably not roasted in vegetable oil, but you know, eat as much steak and bacon and eggs, preferably, you know, pasture and grass fed and all these, but just stay away from Pop-Tarts, mm-hmm. microwave popcorn, cereal, try to limit those things. Cause those are frankenfoods. We call them frankenfoods, right? They're not real. So eat as much of the natural food. Cause we've been equipped since the beginning of time to break that down with ease and kind of lay off the fake foods.
So you were mentioning just before we jumped on that you're big into fasting for optimization. Maybe talk a little bit about that. What have you noticed? How long you've been doing that for? How does it help you?
I didn't really know about fasting until about 6 years ago. I started listening to the Primal Blueprint podcast with Mark Sisson, and he was one of the leading components of fasting. And so I started fasting daily. It really depends. That's the beauty of daily fasting, is that it's flexible. Some days I won't eat till 3 o'clock and I'll just eat from 3 to 7 p.m. Some days I'll eat at 1 and do a 1 to 6. But I've been doing daily fasting since November of 2014. And I'm never going to go back to eating breakfast. I love eggs and I just eat Brinner. I just eat breakfast for dinner. Mm-hmm. I love the, and it's not even the weight loss biohack, but certainly it does help. And that's one of the ways I've kept off my weight for the decades is by fasting. But for me, it's my workouts are better. And for me, it's just the cognition. I feel like right now I'm fasting. I haven't eaten today. And it's like that old Bradley Cooper movie, Limitless. I don't know if you've ever seen it, where he takes that experimental drug and then he can see everything. He can think quicker. He can speak Chinese, all this nonsense. But that's how I feel when I'm fasting. It's just everything runs better. And I don't miss the spike crash of eating six times a day, like we were taught when I was a kid, right? Eat every 3 hours or whatever like that. I don't miss that at all. So I do it for the weight loss biohack, but not really. It's more for just the cognition and what it does for, you know, aging, and it's an endogenous way to increase your testosterone and all these benefits. But yeah, I'm never going to eat before 1 o'clock ever again in my life.
Yeah. Fasting has really exploded in the last couple of years, especially. It's really almost going mainstream, sure. I think, which is, it's funny to see, because it's like, okay, well, if that's what we got to do, that's what we got to do. You know, if that can go mainstream at the very least, I think I always say, if moms in Long Island are talking about it, then it's popular. Right. So
our ancestors, our paleo ancestors did feast and famine. They would go days without eating and they were perfectly fine. So, I mean, we are wired to fast. This breakfast is the most important meal of the day. This is a lie that was made by cereal companies 100 years ago. You know, there's no like really good study showing that we absolutely need to eat a breakfast. And I would tell people, fasting is not a diet. It's a lifestyle. You're still supposed to pack in your 2,600 calories and for men during your eating window. But, you know, some people do it for weight loss, and say for keto. You know what I mean? Keto is another thing that's very popular right now. For people who want to lose weight and get, you know, good biohacks. But I mean, what do you think, Aaron, in terms of nootropics? What are the best nootropics that a common person can do that's not super expensive, that they have to go to the now bankrupt GNC or someplace like that to get?
Yeah, I saw that too. GNC. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's kind of about time. You know, the crap they were selling there,
way overpriced too.
Yeah. Well, you know, as far as nootropics go, so my approach to nootropics is really more about the holistic approach. Like, how do we holistically optimize the brain, right? So the keto diet is a great example. Fasting is a great example. Although I don't, you know, on my blog and people I work with, I don't kind of jump straight into fasting. You know, if somebody wants to experiment with it, I go, hey, go ahead. I think there's a right way to do it. You know, don't do your non-fasting time with like Pop-Tarts and bread and stuff like that. You'll have a really hard time. But you know, what I try to do is I try to say, okay, how can we optimize the mind? Well, let's look at the gut. Let's look at blood sugar. Let's look at toxicity, right? Because all of these things affect the way your brain works. You know, there's real interesting research coming out of these new kind of startup companies that are exploring how do we optimize gut bacteria, like the psychobiome, to produce neurotransmitters that we need, because we know 90% of your serotonin is made in the gut. GABA is made in the gut. Dopamine's made in the gut. So I think that the nootropics conversation overall just needs to change from from what pills do I take for this thing? Because that's the pharmaceutical, that's the allopathic medicine approach to, okay, how do I fundamentally enhance my brain to work better? So, you know, I think once you start establishing that, you know, once you kind of get on a protocol and you start experimenting, should I eat breakfast? Should I not eat breakfast? You know, should I fast? When is my fasting window? You know, should I eat? Some people go straight carnivore and they see amazing results. Some people go vegan and see amazing results. Some people do paleo, you know, I kind of err towards the more paleo, you know, type thing, involve all the different foods and see what you do best. But I think most importantly is you need to test, right? You need to know, if you can get a blood test from a doctor, and that's not going to cost you $1 million, you know, get that, see where your A1C is, see where your blood sugar is at, see what how your kidneys are. I'm a big fan of hair mineral tests and urine organic acid tests. I run chemical toxicity tests for people, glyphosate tests for people. Mold is a big one. I'm talking to a lot of people about mold right now, and it's just bonkers what's happening with mold. And we can see all that in urine, right? And then from there, you kind of say, okay, well, what's going on in my body? You know, what's my gut bacteria situation? What's my candida situation? What's my oxalate situation? Are my minerals balanced? Because you can look at somebody's mineral results and see like, okay, do you have excess calcium? Do you have excess do you not have enough magnesium? Do you have excess potassium? You know, you want to level that out. You can see the heavy metals. And then once we get all that done and we say, here's how we optimize that with your lifestyle, start moving, you know, get up and move, you know, movement helps grow BDNF, you know, increases BDNF, and you're literally going to grow new brain by exercising. For some people, it's doing high intensity interval training. For some people, it's more like endurance stuff. Some people it's lifting. I'm a big fan of everybody lifting. But you know, I know some people just can't do it. So you work your way into it. And then from there, once you kind of optimize that, I say, you know, try some things like some more kind of natural nootropics, try some mushrooms like lion's mane, right? Get your B vitamins, right? Make sure you're getting enough B12, B6, B6 magnesium. I like a nice like mineral balance formula. There's some really good pre-formulated stacks like Mind Lab Pro, which I really like. They have, I think, 11 nootropics in there, like CDP choline. They have rhodiola rosea. I love the adaptogenic herbs. Bacopa monnieri, they have lion's mane, L-theanine. Amino acids are amazing, you know, for the brain. NAC.
Are these expensive for people to buy?
You know, they can be expensive, but like Mind Lab Pro, I think is like 60 to 70 bucks for a bottle. And that's like, I believe a 30-day supply, but you can pick up NAC for less than 20 bucks. You know, you can get a bottle of lion's mane, I think for less than you can get, or the powder of lion's mane, or reishi mushroom or something for 20, 30 bucks. You know, I say that, but I always have to like make sure people understand like quality is king with supplements, right? Like you got people who buy this cheap turmeric from China, and it's filled with heavy metals because the Chinese farmers get paid by the pound. So they load their shit up with lead, and you know, it comes over here and people are, you know, tossing it down their gullet, and, you know, you might be getting turmeric, but you're also getting, you know, lead toxicity, which just kind of cancels out the whole thing. But I think if you just kind of stick with, I love amino acids, like I said, L-theanine, N-acetylcysteine, taurine. If you're doing the keto diet, something like L-carnitine is really good because L-carnitine helps shuttle the fat, makes you more efficient using fat. Some people are getting fat and they're just not using it efficiently enough. So L-carnitine is really good. L-glutamine.
When you talk about the gut health, do you promote them to eat more fermented foods, or do you kind of gear them toward eat more prebiotic foods that naturally grow the gut? What do you tell them there?
You know what's funny? The thing is, when you tell someone to drink kombucha, they go to the store and they get those bottles of kombucha that are in the plastic and they're filled with sugar. And then, you know, if I can convince somebody to take a few minutes, you know, every week and just make their own kombucha, like I'm a big fan of that. It's actually fairly easy to do. Keep it in glass, you know, like what we used to do is get like a big pickle jar from Costco and then just make kombucha in that. and then you got kombucha for weeks. But I think fermented foods are great. I love sauerkraut, kimchi. Some people love the kefir is really good. I think it's a great place to start. I think some people need, I go back and forth with like over supplementation, but I think there are probiotics that are really good for some people. Like there's a probiotic called Megaspore and Bio Optimizers. And there's another one. They're like spore-based probiotics. And I actually just had this lady on the podcast. Her name is Dr. Grace Liu, and she works for the Gut Institute. She trains practitioners on how to really help people use optimize the gut. And she's got these really good probiotics that help increase the amount of oxalobacter, which is the bacteria in your gut that breaks down oxalate, which so many of us are missing right now because we got doused with antibiotics when we were kids, like me, and just wiped out. So people now are doing these like high spinach, high veggie diets. And then they're like, I feel healthy, but then I got skin issues and I got brain fog. And then the oxalate starts binding into your, it starts accumulating in your kidneys, in your prostate, in your liver, in your brain, in your endothelium. So oxalates are a huge problem right now with eating too many veggies. So getting some oxalobacter, getting some lactobacillus. Some people need I believe it's with candida, you need like Saccharomyces boulardii is good for candida. And candida is a monster with mental health, you know. Fungal overgrowth is just tears the brain up. So
when I think of candida, I think of like yeast infections and thrush on the tongue. So I didn't know it's a major problem in terms of cognitive health.
Oh, so here's the thing is like it really, so I've spoken with a couple of really interesting researchers who talk a lot about oxalate, and there's kind of a symbiotic relationship between fungal overgrowth in the gut and oxalate. And so there's this war on candida, and people are taking these botanicals like biocidin, which is real powerful because it breaks up biofilm in the gut. Because basically, you know, the biofilm is where the bacteria and the fungus get together and basically build themselves like a little fortress, you know, and, you know, they become resistant to all of these different, you know, treatments that people do, even like antibiotics to some extent. So you need like these biofilm disruptors like biocidin to go in there. But the problem is that when you start doing that, you start wiping out too much candida, and you need candida because it sequesters heavy metals out of the gut, out of the blood, and helps you flush that stuff out. Yeah. And the problem is people are the low fat, high sugar complex in this country, it has increased the candida because the candida feeds on the sugar. So people just have way too much fungal overgrowth also because of the mold issues happening right now. And so when you get that, there's a lot of studies that tie mold, fungal overgrowth, and things like autism, and even, you know, like anxiety, hyperactivity, ADHD, all these different neurological problems. And it all kind of also comes from.
And you think most of the people are exposed to this mold because of in their houses?
Yeah.
Getting most of the mold?
Yep. Yeah. We have moldy homes. We got moldy cars. Here in Puerto Rico, it's devastating. Like, I didn't start paying attention to mold until like within this last year or so. And then when I started really looking at it, I'm like, holy shit, this stuff is everywhere, dude. Like in my place in Puerto Rico, the place I just moved out of, my wife, she brought a bunch of jackets down here. She can't wear them. It's too hot. And she starts pulling them out of the closet and they all got mold spores on them, you know? And then we got these things off of Amazon that just like collect moisture, like these bags filled with like these salts, and they collect moisture. So we put them in our closets, and I'm telling you, within 48 hours, these things were filled with water.
Wow.
So it's bonkers just how much moisture is in the air. And you have homes on the East Coast that are damaged from hurricanes, you know. The cars have been underwater, the homes have just been wrecked, and people react real differently. It's a real bio-individual, the reaction to mold. Like you hear some cases of people who test high for mold, like the mycotoxins urine test, and it fits just perfect correlation to their mental disorders. And then they leave and they go somewhere, like people get relief when they go out on vacation, they go somewhere dry. And then they're like, I just feel better being in this dry weather, like in Southern California or in Arizona or something. Maybe even like San Antonio or something. I don't know if it's a big problem there. But yeah, mold is there's some just bonkers stories with the mold. And, you know, again, it starts growing the fungus in your body, and man, the world of gut bacteria, mold, parasites, and the way these things literally are controlling your brain. They control the food you crave. They control the thoughts you think. You know, I mean, there's some real psychological stuff going on with these issues.
That's what
makes
the microbiome so fascinating, because it's like this undiscovered world. And, you know, we don't have a camera. Like, the endoscope can go into the duodenum of the small intestine, and then, of course, you can put a colonoscope up the butt. But it's like this unknown world, you know, the 20 feet of intestines and the colon, just all these things that are going on over there. And I like how you mentioned antibiotics. It just drives me crazy, these doctors that just prescribe antibiotics for everything, right? You have a sinus infection, antibiotic. You have an ear infection, antibiotic. You have, your throat hurts, antibiotic. And they don't know, or they don't care, that it's essentially an atomic bomb that's going to wipe out your microbiome, your probiotic bacteria, your good stuff down there that's fighting all the pathogenic stuff. And it's just so frustrating how these doctors, and again, I think they're well-intentioned, but if you are a mom, let's say you have a kid with an earache, right? And you're waiting at the urgent care or the doctor for an hour or two. And then they go in and the doctor's like, you know what, or whatever, throat infection. Like, they're like, be like, you know what, this could be a viral issue. I don't want to give a kid an antibiotic, because if it's a viral issue, it's completely useless. So why don't you just treat the symptoms? And a lot of times the doctor will say that, and the mom will get mad, right? We've been here 2 hours. It goes back to the drugs, right? Pop a pill. I need an antibiotic. I need an antibiotic. Well, actually, I mean, we don't know. This could be a viral issue. I need an antibiotic. So mm-hmm. The doctor will give her antibiotics to make sure she's happy and she comes back. And even the American Academy of Pediatrics has written that don't give kids under the age of 2 antibiotics for ear infections. Just mm-hmm. don't do it. And then there's studies saying that the more antibiotics you take as a kid, the better chance you'll be fat later on. We know they shoot up all the cattle, the chickens, the fish with antibiotics to plump them up. And growth hormones and all these things, you know, how is that affecting us when we eat them? You know, it just drives me crazy how nonchalant these doctors are about just giving antibiotics, and not even to mention the antibiotic resistance issues and all these other issues with antibiotics. It drives me crazy.
Yeah. The under 2 thing is real interesting, because I didn't realize this. And I was reading some work by Dr. William Shaw, who runs the Great Plains Lab, who does the organic acids test. And basically what he found in his research is that one of the most common, I shouldn't say causes, but kind of most common correlations to autism is this dynamic of kids getting an ear infection before they're 2 years old. Doctor gives the kid antibiotics, or maybe it's under 3 or 5 or something like that. Under 5 years old is when it commonly happens. They get just a devastating ear infection. They go to the doctor. Mom is tired. Mom can't deal with the kid screaming and crying. The kid's in pain. So they give the antibiotic. The antibiotic goes in, wipes out all of the good gut bacteria, all the gut bacteria, right? You need the bad stuff too. And then what happens is they start eating, you know, they're drinking formula. They're eating, you know, this processed fucking baby food, whatever that slop is that they put in jars, you know, and then parents give their kids, you know, McDonald's cheeseburgers and French fries and, you know, all that stuff, Happy Meals. And then they grow this ecosystem of just, you know, terrible gut bacteria, gut flora, nothing good going on down there. And their immune system is wrecked from that point forward. And you're right. It starts turning into obesity, because the body is, cortisol's running, you know, going everywhere. They got neurological issues. And then for some kids, you know, depending on genetics and individual response, it could lead to things like autism. And then of course, ADHD and things like that.
And that's so controversial, because if you bring it up to the mom, you know, all the antibiotics that you've been pushing on your kids is leading to all these problems. Then they have that knee jerk reaction, right? You're not a doctor, Eric. You're just reading conspiracy blogs or whatever. It's like, no, I mean, we're trying to help you.
Right.
You're not a doctor. You didn't go to med school, blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. Does that mean I can only talk about German politics if I live in Germany or I'm a German politician? I mean, this kind of specious thinking that people have. like only certain people have this knowledge that nobody else can have.
But then you tell them, well, you know, iatrogenic death is the third leading cause of death in the United States, right?
Right.
Well, you don't know that. Well, it's right here on the CDC's website. So are they wrong? I don't know.
Or nosocomial infections. You know, these people that go to the hospital and they get C. diff and then, you know, they die because of it. Yeah.
Right.
We can rationalize everything. And look, I'll be honest. I mean, I have confirmation bias. I have a tendency. I have to kind of believe studies that are more aligned with my thinking. I mean, I'll admit that. But I don't know. It just frustrates me, Eric.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Gregory, you're doing the right thing. You're doing the Lord's work out there. You know, it's people throw the word brave around. And, you know, I think going out there and trying to bring these topics up and introduce them, you know, I found your podcast just because I think I typed in holistic into the iTunes search bar and you were the first ones that came up. So, you know, and you have a lot of fans of your podcast. You have a lot of great reviews on your podcast. So, you're doing something right. And we need more people to be brave and talk about this stuff because, you know, it's hard. And
censorship is coming too. I mean, you see, especially if you talk about the vax stuff, Amazon's blocking any anti-vax literature from the self-publishing. You see Facebook coming out and censoring any anti-vax stuff. And it's frustrating. What happened to this? Just having a dialogue and letting every party speak and just have a conversation. But it's this Orwellian world. I mean, and you can certainly see in the last 2 months with the rioting and all this, you know, BLM. And if you say all lives matter, you know, you're a racist, you know, all this nonsense, this Orwellian world that we're living now where there's essentially thought crimes and we have to control what people think or say. And if you say something that's not aligned with allopathic medicine, big business, you know, social media, celebrities, then you can get doxxed, fired, demonetized. You know, talk about YouTube, right? I can't have any videos on vaccines, for example, because it'll get demonetized. I had an episode over at Red Pill Men's Health, how 70% of suicides are done by adult men, right? We think suicides are mostly teenage kids. 70% are adult men. I get a video like that, it gets demonetized, you know? So we are entering a world where you're going to be persecuted for thinking something that's not part of the groupthink.
Yeah. Well, this has been super interesting. I agree with you on so much. I could probably have this conversation for a couple more hours and just, you know, back and forth on the corruption in the medical system and all this stuff. It's always a fun chat, but maybe you can leave the listeners here with a place they can find you, your podcast, your YouTube channel, your blog, and if they want to work with you, where they can do all that.
Yeah, so if you go to naturopathicearth.com, so that's NaturoPathic Earth, one word, naturopathicearth.com. You can reach me there. The podcast, as I mentioned, has been rebranded. It's the Awakened Man podcast. So if you type in the Awakened Man or Holistic Health News, it'll still pop up. You can reach me on YouTube at Red Pill Men's Health. My YouTube channel there. And you can just reach me also through redpillmenshealth.com. That's another place you can reach me. But I appreciate you having me on, Eric. Thank you very much.
Yeah, this was a great chat. And listeners, go check out A. Gregory Luna's podcast, his YouTube channel. Thank you so much for listening. And for more on podcasts like these, check out holisticnootropics.com/podcast for all the show notes and archives of previous podcasts. And for all things nootropics, including scientific references and guides to using nootropics, check out holisticnootropics.com.
Thanks for listening. For more brain-boosting info, in-depth articles, and show notes, check out holisticnootropics.com.